everybody, it's Rich. Welcome, or welcome back, to the Access Church Podcast. Hey, at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you'll find our complete Sunday experience with music, as well as great content for kids and students. Visit accesschurch.com to keep up with everything going on around here at Access, and subscribe to our email list. We'll send you helpful suggestions each week designed to help you make friends, grow in faith, and live with purpose. Most importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Enjoy.
Well, I hope you'll consider Starting Point and our other opportunities for you to get connected to other people. Because as we start off this new year and we get into a new season, it is a fantastic opportunity to begin some healthy connections and some healthy relationships. And I know some of you are thinking, I'm okay. I don't need any relationships. I am full up on that. In fact, some of you, I didn't realize how many of my friends were self-declared introverts until the pandemic started a couple of years ago. And some of my friends began posting these memes like, I have been training my entire life for quarantine, right? You remember some of that? In fact, we thought it'd be really fun here. We would start a small group just for you introverts. And then you could all say that you were gonna come and then at the last minute cancel for no reason. And we thought that would be a really great small group and that none of you would know that nobody else was there because anyway, not to make fun of introverts, let's make fun of introverts for a minute. Can we do that? Because I'll just admit, I am weird, okay? We do a personality test around here that we kind of inherited from North Point that we use for our staff, and it is called the Right Path Profile. If you've ever done the Right Path Profile, it gives you all these different scores, and one of the scores is your introvert-extrovert scale. And my wife, who's like, you know, the walking, talking personage of Jesus. She just models Jesus in every way. So she's like perfectly balanced. We've taken the test multiple times and she scores anywhere from the wide, wide range of 48 to 51, okay? So she is like right in the middle. If you need her to be extroverted, she'll be extroverted. You know, if you need her to be introverted, she can be that. I have no balance at all in my life. Moderation is not one of my strong suits. I'm a 97. On the scale of extroverts and introverts. So I'm just sort of out there. So you guys can make all the extroverts later, but I get the microphone right now, so I get to make the introvert jokes. Here's just a few. Have you guys heard the one about the introvert that walks into a bar alone? No? Never happened. Staying home in their PJs. All right. So you might be an introvert if a perfect weekend means you didn't see any people for 2 days. Or if you're really happy that you got someone's voicemail instead of them answering in person. Or if you'd rather use an ATM than talk to a bank teller. Or if you get your feelings hurt when you're not invited to the party that you definitely were not going to attend. This next one so totally describes my wife. If you would rather set yourself on fire than knock on someone's door uninvited. Or as soon as you get on an elevator, you start hitting the door close button. Anybody doing that? This is just kind of the funny thing. When Stephanie and I first got married, that thing about setting yourself on fire rather than knocking on someone's door uninvited. First, 14, 15 years of our relationship, I had a motorcycle. And Stephanie and I both enjoyed going on motorcycle rides. That was sort of like our day off therapy. Just go out, go for a motorcycle ride. But we had to work it out. Because when we first got married and we went on like our first motorcycle ride, she jumps on the back and off we go. And like a mile down the road, we swing into my friend Bob's driveway. She's like, what are we doing? I'm like, well, we can't just drive past their house and not stop in and say, hi, it's Saturday. Like, let's see what's going on. So we say hi to Bob and Diane. And then a few minutes later, we get back on the motorcycle. We ride out and we go about another mile down the road and we swing into my friend Drew's driveway. She's like, what are we doing? I'm like, well, can't just drive. It's rude to just drive past their house. Am I right, Kent? Kent would not go past anybody's house. You got to stop. You got to say hi. And so Stephanie, we had a little conversation. She had to explain to me that the motorcycle ride for her is therapeutic because she can just sit on the back. We don't have to talk. And we just kind of look at the, you know, trees as they go by. And that's a really good day off for her. But we all recharge in different ways, and that's okay. So all jokes aside, introverts, we love you. We need you. God created you on purpose to give this world balance. There's the thing. Coming out of these last couple of years, it has been a difficult season for all of us, and I think even the introverts, okay? Because the reality is, even though I hit 97 on the extrovert scale, on a Sunday afternoon, there's a really good chance that I won't take your phone call because I've had a lot of people time on Sunday, right? And so even extroverts reach their limit. And I think that the same thing is true of introverts kind of reaching your limit in terms of not people time. So I actually get to a point where I've had enough of people. I think that as an introvert, you might actually get to the point where you've had enough alone time. And I'm here this morning to tell you that that time has come. It is a new season. We're kicking off a new school year. This is a new time to get, you know, jumping into things. And I want to know, I want you to know that, you know, during the week, I get together, have coffee with people. I talk with people individually. And I have just heard a recurring theme over the last several months that caused me to plan this series. And the recurring theme that I've heard from people is just like, I'm tired. In fact, I'm more than tired. I am exhausted. The last 2 years has worn me down. Socially, professionally, the political chaos, like I'm just worn down. And I get it. I get it. I know that we all need a sense to just sort of exhale and to breathe and hope this summer there's been a little bit of opportunity for you to do that. But now we're kicking into a new year. And I want us to gear up. I want us to prepare because I don't think that easy times are all we've got left ahead. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think there is a storm coming in your life. I don't know what that storm is. I don't wish that storm upon you, but the reality is that if you're in a season right now where you're getting to exhale, you're getting to relax, you're getting to breathe a little bit, the reality is there is a storm coming. It's just the facts of life. I don't have to know you. I don't have to know your life story to know that there is a storm coming. It's just the reality of life. And how we prepare for the storm before we arrive there oftentimes really determines how well we weather the storm, how well we go through the storm. And so we're talking about courage over these 4 weeks. And last week, we talked about Caleb and Joshua, just an incredible picture of courage. I'm so sorry. We had technical difficulty last week. The internet was down, so we couldn't broadcast live. And then we were recording to a hard drive, and we thought we would just upload that later. The hard drive crashed, and so the only option for you to get last week's message is through our podcast, which some of you didn't know we had a podcast. We do. It's awesome. And it's a great way to listen to me or Andy on 2X. And then you can just get through us that much faster. So a little tip for you. That may or may not be how I listen to Andy's messages. But anyway, so listen to the podcast because I think it's a great message for you in this season to think about what it means to have courage as you prepare for whatever God might have next for you. And today we're going to look at another story, but first just a quick recap. We talked last week about Joshua and Caleb and the fact that Caleb in particular was referred to as wholehearted. As wholehearted. And I just want that for you. That's my prayer, my hope for you, that you would go into the season wholehearted, meaning that you love the Lord your God with your whole heart. And you're so wholehearted, you're so consumed with your love for God that there's not room for anything else to creep in. Because the reality is that when we hit problems in life, and we do hit problems in life, then fear and anxiety begin to creep in. And it's when we take our eyes off of God and all that he can do and his purpose for us, and we can put our focus on the pain and the problems, and then we begin to get very, very confused, not just about the plan, because sometimes plans need to change. We talked about this, but we get confused about God's purpose for us. So that was last week's message. Today, we're going to jump ahead a little bit in the story of the nation of Israel. And so just for context, we are in now 605 BC, okay? It's about 605 BC, and Israel has really, at one time, was the dominant superpower in the world, and Israel is no longer that dominant superpower. Babylon has ascended, and now Nebuchadnezzar wins the first of what will be a series of battles against Israel, and he takes the first of what will be a series of hostages back to Babylon. And so he would do this with different nations that he conquered. He would take some of the people back to basically enculturate them in Babylon so that they would begin to think like and talk like and act like Babylonians. And then maybe later he might reinstall them in some of the nations that he had conquered. But he brought four men in particular. There's a much larger group probably, but we're told in the book of Daniel about four men in particular. And you might guess that since it's the book of Daniel, that one of them would be, oh, you guys are so good. I knew, definitely, first class. All right, and so the others, though, would be Rak, Shak, and Benny. Anybody got the VeggieTales video at home, right? I love VeggieTales. Let me tell you, like, seminary is awesome, but you really want to understand the Bible, you get yourself some VeggieTales. That's how you understand the Bible stories, okay? And so you guys know the story about Rak, Shak, and Benny. We're going to look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These are the names that the Chaldeans or the Babylonians gave them. They were actually, their Jewish names were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And so kind of right off the bat in Daniel chapter 1, we see this story where Daniel and his buddies, they're asked to eat a diet that is not a kosher diet. And so they decide in that moment, they have to decide, are they going to follow God? Are they going to trust God in that moment? Or are they going to kind of go with the flow of this new culture to which they have been taken? And some of you guys have done the Daniel fast. Please don't raise your hand. That's like the worst application of Daniel chapter 1. Sorry, just have to tell you. It's not about the diet, okay? If you want to eat vegetables and water, that's fine. But the story's not about the diet. The story is about the fact that Daniel and his friends were willing to trust God in the face of overwhelming and daunting circumstances. And so they did. And so we're going to pick up on these guys a little bit later in chapter 3. And we're going to, so chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has this dream. He can't understand it. He tells everybody, like, hey, I'm basically, if you can't interpret my dream, then I'm going to kill you all. And all the wise men kind of scramble and they find Daniel. And so he has to not only interpret the dream, but tell the king what his dream was. And so he does. And part of the dream is that there is this huge 90-foot tall idol or statue. In the dream, it's just a statue. Somehow Nebuchadnezzar understands this to be, oh, I should then build an idol, which was, again, not the point of the dream. The point of the dream was that God is going to humble you if you don't humble yourself before God. And somehow Nebuchadnezzar's application of that was, I should build an idol and make everyone bow down to an idol or a likeness of me. So this is where we come to in the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So at this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. And they said to the king, may the king live forever. When somebody walks into your office and they're like, may you manage forever, right? Immediately you're suspicious. They're kind of getting on your good side. And they say, your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship this image of gold. So king, you've already made this decree, and you've not just made a decree that people should acknowledge your kingship, but they must go further than that, and they must bow as if you are a deity. And then whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews. Now, this is interesting. Not all the Jews, some Jews. Do we know the names of the ones who were willing to bow down? Nope, not recorded, never heard from again in history. But we know the names of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There are some Jews whom you've set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So they had gotten promoted earlier when Daniel had been promoted. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty, they neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold that you have set up. So Nebuchadnezzar's a little bit emotional. He says, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, I'm going to give you another chance. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, which is interesting. They acknowledge him as king. They didn't vote for him. They didn't choose him, but they acknowledge his role and his title as king. King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. Then who do you need to defend yourself in front of? If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able. Do you remember that phrase from last week with Joshua and Caleb? He is able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. This is such a fantastic example of courage. You see, courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is understanding who to fear. Courage is understanding who's in charge in this situation. And sometimes we get a little confused on that, right? We get some bad news. We get a phone call we weren't expecting. We have a conversation with our boss, or we have a conversation with our doctor, or we have a conversation with our spouse, or we have a conversation with one of our kids, and it is not good news. And in those moments, it is so easy to forget who is in charge, who can be trusted. And the beauty of the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is that their focus was crystal clear. They knew they could trust God Almighty. I'm Nebuchadnezzar, I don't know, he seems a little moody, he's got some swings, but God we can trust. And so to God alone will we submit. But then they throw this in. You're prayed like this, but even if he does not, God, I believe you can save me. God, I believe you can rescue me. God, I believe you can provide a way out. But even if you do not. You understand? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they didn't get confused about the purpose because the plan might change. Oh, the plan could go crazy. Their story could end in a way that they never imagined their story would end, by being thrown into a furnace. But even then, even if that happened, we want you to know, Your Majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you set up. So Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He had selected them for service in his household. And now he orders the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. Do you think this is a guy that goes a little overboard? Like, you're going to throw them into a furnace. Why are you tying them up? I don't know. But these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and outer clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. And the king's command was urgent. And the furnace is so hot that the flames of the fire actually killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. The end. Let's pray. You guys have read the story before, right? Or you've watched the VeggieTales video. That's awesome. Because this really, really cool thing happens. And I get it. If you're here today and you would say, you know what? I'm not sure about these Bible stories. I've got some questions about whether these things could have actually happened. I get it. There is some weird stuff in the Bible. And the thing is, like, when you study the Bible, the more you study the Bible, the weirder stuff you find, actually. And so if you think that you're concerned because there's some weird things in the Bible, trust me, preachers have read all the weird stuff in the Bible. But here is the absolute strangest miracle in the entire Bible. And if you can grapple with this one, then it helps you to grapple with all the rest. Okay? The most difficult miracle in the entire Bible goes like this. In the beginning, God created. That's it. You might think God created in 6 days. You might think that God created over millions of years. I'm not here to argue that. I'm just here to say, if there's a God, if there is a God, and in any way he pushed the start button on the universe, that miracle is so unfathomable. And when you begin to examine and discover the intricacy with which our universe is designed, the intricacy with which your body is designed, the intricacy with which the human eyeball is designed, then some of these stories in the Bible, honestly, they're a lot easier to accept. But here is this crazy story where they're thrown into the fire, and then King Nebuchadnezzar leaps to his feet in amazement, and he asks his advisors, weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into the fire? And they replied, certainly, your majesty. And he said, look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods. Most Old Testament scholars believe that this was a pre-incarnate representation of Jesus, that this was Jesus walking with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego through the fire. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the royal advisors, these are all just different words for advisors of the king, those who surrounded him, who basically kind of had a pass on this whole thing. Daniel might have actually been included in that group. And they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed, their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. However, some accounts do say that when they came out of the fire, there was a significant carbon footprint that each of them, you like that? It's a dad joke. I've got more. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him. Now, we read through these stories, especially when they're familiar to us, and sometimes we're like, yeah, I know this one. I know how it ends. But pause for a moment and put yourself in a situation even remotely like this situation where you are threatened with certain death if you do not trust in him. What will you do? Where will you go? What will it look like? I was reading a little bit of history this week, and it's a piece that we've talked about here before, but there was a governor of Turkey under the Roman Empire, and he was actually under Emperor Trajan, and Emperor Trajan had commissioned him to go and to find the Christians. This is about 79 AD, and to persecute them. And Pliny the Younger is the name of this governor. And we actually have the letters that he and Emperor Trajan wrote back and forth to each other. It's fascinating what has survived antiquity. But he talks about the fact that they rounded up these Christians and they brought them in. And he wanted to make sure that he was talking to actual Christians. And so he threatened them with persecution and with death and told them that they could escape death if they would just recant Jesus. And some of them said, oh, you know, I don't really believe in the whole Jesus thing. And he let them go. And others said, no, on pain of death, I will not recant Jesus. This is just 30, 40 years after Jesus walked on the earth. And they have this opportunity. And then Pliny says, okay, now that I know that you are a real Christian, let's talk about what it means to be someone who worships Jesus. What does that mean that you worship Jesus? So here they are, faced with this incredible choice, but they trusted in him and they defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. And then Nebuchadnezzar, who has these mood swings, he says, "Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach," no freedom of speech here, "who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save in this way." And then he promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now there's a couple of takeaways from the story for us today. One of them is not just that by standing firm and trusting in God, that you can make a point for yourself, take a stand for yourself. But by doing so, you can actually make a difference. Through the faith of all four of these guys in chapter one, and now the specific story in chapter three of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, under the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon was changed. Babylon was changed. They didn't just resist culture, they changed culture. God is calling you not just to be different, but to make a difference. Another takeaway from this story is that these men did not walk through this alone. They stood together. And I don't know what any one of them individually would have done if they were all alone. But the reality is they weren't alone. They had two other guys that would stand with them, that would walk with them in the most difficult and trying situation of their life. And the truth is, you don't know when the most trying situation of your life is going to arrive. There's no predicting it. There's no knowing. It just happens one day. And when it happens, you need friends. If you're on the extrovert side, if you're on the introvert side, you need friends. If you're an introvert, it might be hard for you to have established the kinds of friendships that we're talking about. If you're an extrovert, you might have a lot of friends, but you may not have the deep, authentic, meaningful kinds of friendships that we're talking about. And that's because, frankly, in our culture, we don't talk very much about friendship. We talk about marriage and we talk about parenting, and we talk about a lot of other topics, but you know what? Single people need friends. Married people need friends. Wealthy people need friends. Broke people need friends. We all need friends. And frankly, in just kind of the come and go of life without a lot of intentionality, we end up being friends with just the people that are nearest to us. They live down the street from us. They work at the cubicle next to yours. You went to college together. You just sort of found yourself next to each other on the journey, and you were like, well, I guess we're friends. You know, you land in college and you've got a roommate and you're like, I guess we'll be friends. We'll sit next to each other in the cafeteria, whatever. But I want to challenge you this morning to seek out specific kinds of friendships. To look not just for someone that'll kind of be with you, but someone that will lead you to Jesus. Someone that will influence you, someone that will impact you, someone that will encourage you, someone that will hold you accountable in the best way. And when I say that in the best way, I mean a mutual relationship, not some kind of artificial structured thing where you just fake it with each other. I mean people in your life that have permission to ask you the most difficult questions. I don't know how many of these people you need in your life. I know you need a couple or a few. Jesus seemed to, out of the 12, disciples that he spent most of his time with, it seemed that he had a couple of disciples that he was especially close to. They're always listed at the beginning of all the lists of disciples. We know that he had this special relationship with John and with Peter and with James and Andrew. It was closer than it was for the rest of all of his disciples. In our men's group this past spring, we talked about know your six, right? Know your six, meaning at the end of your life, there's going to be six guys that are selected to carry your casket. Have you ever thought about who that would be? And here's the thought. Do they know that they're your six? And what would it look like to specifically and intentionally invest in those relationships? This might sound weird to some of you. You're thinking, wait, would I have to sit down and actually write some names down. Think intentionally about who you want to invest in your life. Take those names and put them on your calendar. Schedule some time to go to dinner together. Schedule some time for some phone calls. Think about, man, I haven't talked to that person in a really long time. Intentionally move toward new friendships that might be promising. Not just because it's someone that, you know, lives down the street and they seem to have really great parties and they seem to be fun people to be around. But people that will lead you closer in your relationship with God. People that will help you be intentional in choosing to trust God when it seems almost impossible. What does it look like to know your six, or your four, or your three? But I think there should be at least a handful of people that you know, these are the people that have permission to ask me any question. And to have that kind of relationship with them. Look, I know, and guys, I'm gonna say just honestly, men, we are really bad at this. We are really bad at this. Sometimes, you know, I hear my wife on the phone with her friends and the conversations they have, and I'm just like, wow, like they are so authentic and they are so real with each other. You know, it's the whole thing, you go out, you spend 4 hours with one of your guy friends and you come home and your wife is like, so how's John? And you're like, fine. You're like, well, is he like his new job? I don't know. Let me talk about it. It's like, well, it's kind of a big deal, you know? He was unemployed for 6 months and he got this job. I don't know, it didn't come up, you know? Well, how's Diane? How's she doing? Don't know. Really? The whole thing with Diane never came up. You know, it's like, I have very limited information, right? Men, we've got to get better at this. We've got to lean into these relationships. We've got to be intentional with these relationships. And I think that sometimes it means that we actually have some awkward conversations. I'll tell you, and I've only done this one time. It was incredibly awkward, but I do think that sometimes we're in a season of life where we need to just really awkwardly say to someone, I'd like to be your friend. I remember I was working with a guy in Ohio, and it was that season of life where we just started having kids and we're not getting any sleep and we're exhausted. And I was with a coworker, and we were coming back from Taco Bell. You know, we'd had lunch together and we were pulling back into the parking lot. And I just said, Dave, I need a friend right now. And he was like, nope. No, I'm kidding. It's a weird thing. And it, you know, it's the only time I've ever done this, but I was like, I need a friend right now. And I kind of feel like you probably need a friend too. And I get it. Like there's going to be parts of our friendship that are kind of off limits. Like we can't talk about work, but I'd like a friend that I can talk about everything else with. And I need that. You know, I'd left all these great friends behind in college, and I was in a new town and a new place, and now this new stage of life, and I needed a friend. And we are still really good friends to this day, and our wives are even better friends to this day. But you gotta pick some people, and you gotta say, I choose to invest in you. And it's a little bit vulnerable. And for some of you, it just feels way too much, like, you know, the whole dating thing, and you got to define the relationship, and you're like, I went through that, I don't want to do that anymore. I know. But I'm asking you to be intentional and to be strategic about your friendships. When the fire comes, who's going to walk through the fire with you? There's a storm out there on the horizon in your life. Who will be with you? Not just with you, but pointing you back to Jesus, pointing you back to Jesus, pointing you back to Jesus. Because here's what we believe is true here at Access Church, that life change is the result of truth in the context of relationships. It's not enough to just know the truth. It's not enough to have more knowledge. It is truth delivered in the context of relationship that changes lives. In fact, the author of Hebrews said this, what I think is a really great challenge for all of us today, and especially for those of us maybe that are watching online. He said, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. What does it look like for us to spur one another on? There's a little bit in that that says, hey, this isn't just like standing on the sidelines and cheering for you, right? There's a little bit of that like, hey, I'm gonna poke you a little bit. I'm gonna spur you on toward love and good deeds. And then especially after this season, after these last couple of years of not giving up meeting together. How did the author know 2,000 years ago that we would need to still hear that today? Not to give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. You need friends and you need relationships. And I'm not here to say that we can deliver that for you. I don't know that we can. I'd love to try. I'd love to set the table for that. I don't think we can promise that. I don't think we can make that happen. I don't think we can say, hey, if you just show up at Access Church, you're gonna meet the most amazing people you've, well, we can say that. We can say that, right? You're gonna meet the most amazing people you've ever met anywhere. I don't know what's gonna develop from that. And I can't make a promise about what's gonna develop it, but I know that you need to take a step and give it a shot. And so I'm so glad that you're here today. I'm so glad you're starting off the school year right. I'm so glad that you're here. But let's make a habit of this. Let's make this an opportunity, a place where we can begin to bump into other people who are also trying to figure out what it looks like to follow after Jesus. Because you don't just need friends, your kids need friends. This isn't just good for you, this is good for them. They're back there in an environment where they're making friends with other kids who, you know, probably are like eating their boogers. I don't know. I'm not saying they're the sharpest kids in town, but I'm telling you that their parents brought them here, which is a really great start. Like, your kids are hanging out with other kids who are being parented by parents who say, I don't know how to do this on my own. I need somebody to partner with me. Church, will you partner with me? Will you be my partner and help me raise my kids? And let me tell you, as someone who's got 4 adult children now, but who all started their faith journey here in Wombaland and Upstreet, it's in this context, it's in their small groups, and God bless them, it's with their small group leaders that they began to understand what it looked like to trust God no matter what. In any circumstance, you need this. Your kids need this too. And listen, if you're watching online, I know some of you don't have any choice and you can't be here. And I get that. And we're so thrilled that we can provide online for you. But if there's a way that you can be here, if there's a way that you can get your kids here, it's good for you, it's good for your kids, and it's good for our community. It's how we serve and how we say to our community that we are for you, because we are. So, real quick, I want you to know that we believe in community here. And we believe that community trumps content. Most of us don't need more content. We don't need to watch more sermons online. We know enough. What we need are relationships. We need people to help us apply it. And that's why we say here that circles are better than rows. That sitting here in rows on Sunday morning, awesome, good job. But you know what's really gonna introduce life change? Sitting in circles, looking face to face, praying for other people, cheering for other people. If you've ever had the experience where you sit in a circle and you share something really difficult in life and you have that group of people come around you and pray for you in the moment, that's not something you get from your neighborhood. That's not something you get from your place of business. That is something you get from your church friends who are saying, I'm gonna surround you. I'm gonna bring you to Jesus. I'm gonna pray for you. It is in this context that we really understand what it looks like to grow in our faith. Now, there's lots of different kinds of relationships. I just picked a few to put up here. One of them is counseling, and some of y'all need it. And you know how I know that you need it? Because I need it. I go to counseling once a month. You might need to go to counseling every day. I don't know. But you know, counseling's good. Counseling's helpful. Small group, community group here at Access Church, it's not counseling. Okay, it's an important distinction to make. So some of you, you might need to say, hey, I got some stuff to work on and I need to be in counseling or I need to be in group counseling or I'm looking for a mentoring relationship, I'm looking for a friendship. I can't give you those. I can give you community group. And I can give you a context out of which some of these other things might develop. In fact, it has often been in community group that someone says to me, hey, what's the name of that counselor you see? I think I might need to give him a call. Or it's in the context of counseling that you might, or I'm sorry, community group, where you might identify one person in particular. You say, you know what? These other people are really cool, but that one person, I really wanna take that relationship, that friendship to the next level. And so I wanna invite you, if you haven't already signed up for GroupLink, to sign up for GroupLink. If you're not in a group, if you've been in a group, if your group has ended, if your group is ending this fall and your group is getting ready to recycle, I want you to know this is the way that Steffi and I get into a group. This is the way that everyone on our staff gets into our group. This is the way that all of our leadership gets in a group. This is the way that our elders get into a group. There's no back door for the insiders who are like, oh, we don't have to go through that awkward thing called GroupLink. I mean, 3 years ago, Steffi and I signed up for a group for GroupLink and we showed up, and this is the first time in history the church has happened, but we didn't know anyone in our small group. We didn't know anyone in our small group. And it was one of the best small groups that we have ever been in. And we walk into it just like you with the same awkwardness and the same uncertainty. And we're meeting people and we have to watch their face as they realize that they're in small group with the pastor, you know, and that realization kicks in with them. But we do it. And we have been a part of small group now for probably 20 plus years. And there's no other way that we want to walk through life. And we want you to do it as well. We want you to do this. We want you to sign up for group. It's an 8-week commitment. And during those 8 weeks, we just want you to do 3 things. We want you to show up, because you can't make friends if you're not there. You got to show up. You got to join in. That means when it's time to share, you share. And when it's time to be real, you're real. And I think you'll find that the payoff is fantastic. You will be so glad that you did. Let me pray. God, thank you so much for this opportunity today to take some application from this incredible story of friendship and solidarity that gave certainty to the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Help us to take it away from here and actually have it make a difference in the way that we pursue relationships and friendships in our lives. We ask all this in your name. Amen.